We are back at it. The sun did rise. Bedlam has set on Oklahoma State Athletics. This is the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Kyle Porter. Kyle, are you still like wandering around in a Bedlam hangover?
No, you know, it was funny because, I mean, we saw each other kind of intermittently on Saturday night, but I wasn't, I don't know. It was a different feeling than I've had the last two years anyway, and even way different than 2013. I thought it was a fun game. I don't know if it was a great game. It was a fun game, an awesome atmosphere, and Oklahoma State didn't blow. It wasn't a choke job. You know, like they just didn't win, and we can break that down. But I wasn't really like disappointed with the way everything played out, even though the final outcome for Oklahoma State was incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, I think I feel a lot of the same way. Like, it's one thing to lose to Oklahoma; it's quite another to not attempt to win the game or play timid or play scared. That's not what happened. Like, you know, I talked a lot going into the week about how conservative Gundy is in Bedlam, and rightfully so, he has been. But we didn't see that on Saturday, and that's really all I cared to see, was just run your offense, throw the football, and play football, and they did. And they simply are not as good as Oklahoma. As much as that probably hurts people from Oklahoma State, it's really simple. OU has the better quarterback. OU has the better team, and the better team won. And OSU just did not make enough plays when they had the chance, which we'll talk about. And that's something that you can accept. You can accept losing to a better team. You can't accept playing timid or scared of your rival, and that's not what happened. And so that for me, that was a huge positive to take away.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I can. I think that they have very similar teams, and I think most importantly, what you touched on, Baker Mayfield's better than Mason Rudolph. I hate it. Like, I hate that. I don't want that to be true. I wish it wasn't true. But he just is. And, you know, I know that they both threw two interceptions. Is that right? Yeah. They both threw two. Rudolph's – or did Mason throw – he had the fumble. So he had three turnovers and Baker
had
two.
I don't even count the last. You're just throwing Hail Marys up.
Yeah, so they both had two legitimate turnovers, and I don't know. I just feel like he outplayed Rudolph, and that's sort of what it came down to for me. And you know, I wrote this, and I know we discussed it via text or something we were doing. Oklahoma State had a chance, 3 minutes left, 60 yards to go, 60 yards to go. That's all you want, right? Like that. Like, if you had given all 60,000 people in that stadium, as they were entering the stadium on Saturday afternoon, if you said, would you take this scenario? I think 98% of them would. You know, you've got this best offense in the country, quote unquote, even though they didn't show it in the second half, against an OU defense that's not that good. Not to mention the fact that, as you pointed out, they're playing with three true freshman defensive backs. That's everything you want, and they didn't get it done. And I thought they called the right play on the fourth down, trying to hit Tyron, and Mason just missed the throw.
Should we start with
the first half and work our way up to that?
Yes, we should. But just let me touch on your first point you made there. I think 98% of Oklahoma State fans would take that scenario, and 100% of them would think they're going to win the game if they have the ball in Mason's hands with a chance to win it last. The scenario fans wouldn't want is OU with the ball last with a chance to win, which I guess they still would have even if Mason had made the throw to Tyron. But
yeah, there would have been a minute left, minute 10 or something.
But let's go to the beginning of the game, shall we? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you're never, ever, 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 ever going to convince me that the fumble, non-fumble was him losing, was him never having possession. And the most ludicrous part of the whole thing, whether you think he had possession or not, the officials overturned the call on the field, which means it's indisputable evidence that it's this way. How that is egregious and impossible to say. And the fact they overturned that to me will remain a mystery until the end of time. That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bad. I don't think, you know, I tweeted out the GIF of it and you know, I was kind of throwing some hyperbole out there. I don't think it was indisputable either way. I think you can make the case for both sides, but again, like exactly what you said, based on the fact that it was called a catch and a fumble on the field, there's just no way you can reverse that. You just can't. Like it's like such a 50-50 thing. And I would say the same thing if it's the other way around. If they had called it not a catch on the field, I'd say, yeah, it's close, but like you can't reverse it, you know? It was terrible. But I want to go back even further than that. I'm sitting up there, press box, Oklahoma State comes out in these all-black uniforms, which we'll get to later. Unbelievable. Everybody's fired up. The stadium's full like 30 minutes before kickoff. It's like completely full. It was unbelievable. Oklahoma State defers. Baker Mayfield goes out, throws a pick to AJ Green, and you're like, "Oh, it's on! Like this is gonna happen." You know,
stadium is just swaying immediately.
The students are just out of their minds about Mayfield potentially blowing a Bedlam game. You look up 10 minutes later, it's 3-0, and it should be 14-0. And I don't mean should be as in like, well, if they would have done, like they scored 2 touchdowns. That were eventually ruled not touchdowns. And these are the little things that I like to talk about a lot that change legacies and change seasons. You know, they score, Justice Hill scored, James Washington gets called for holding. It probably was, but you could also see that not being called, you know, and same thing with the fumble. And I don't know. It was kind of foreboding for what was to come after that, that sequence, that kind of 4-possession sequence. You're like, well, you know, I've seen this movie before.
I was getting some serious Desmond Rowland flashbacks from 2013, where he scores on the first series of the game. They call it back for holding. And you can call that holding on James Washington literally on every play. Anytime you're blocking somebody, your hands are intertwined with their jersey. When you grab their chest pad, essentially. And I thought Parnell Motley did a great job to flail and kind of just turn his body to the side when he is being held up on a block. That was a horrible call. I thought they missed a hold on OU on the other side when Jeff Badette ran the jet sweep. They held on that play. They didn't call it. Look, I don't want to make it about officials, but two just huge calls go against Oklahoma State. If you're up 14-0 in that game, it is an entirely different. Like people like to just say, well, you still should have made the plays, and that's true. But the change, the mindset of a team completely changes when they're down 14-0 versus up 7-3. OU goes down and scores, makes it 7-3, and instead of being down by 14, they're up by 4. That's a hard thing to get over too if you're Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
And at that point, you just sit there and go, my God, is OSU? Caden McFarlane, who I love from Channel 2 in Tulsa, kind of turns over to me and goes, you know, if you've been following OSU for like 30, 40 years and you see something like that, you got to be sitting there going, are we ever going to get a freaking break against these guys? And I was like, you know what? Like my dad is probably doubled over in his recliner right now. So you're probably right. So, but no, just two huge breaks. And you're right. Little plays like that can swing legacies and all that. And we'll get into that too. But just, I could not believe they overturned the fumble. That to me, and I knew as soon as they showed the referee, I couldn't hear Joel Klatt. Apparently, he was saying the same thing I was. When they showed the referee like writing something down, like his assistant as he's talking on the headset, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to overturn that.
Yeah,
and sure enough, they did.
It was unbelievable. Then after that, it turns into a track meet. I think touchdowns were scored on like, I don't know, 8 of the next 9 drives or something like that. And it was weird because in the stadium, it wasn't this sense of like, it didn't feel very dramatic. It started feeling a little bit inevitable, kind of like the Texas Tech OU game last year, to where you're like, is this good football or is it What's going on here? It was weird, even as bad as OU's defense has been, and especially with how good as Oklahoma State's defense had been coming in, that you're just seeing an automatic touchdown on every drive, two play drives, and you're just like, what's happening?
I don't even know what happened in the second quarter. I blacked out. It was a total whirlwind. But to your point, we were taking bets on Press Row where I was, if they would score in less than five play, like you would have to bet the under on five plays. And when there was one series where OU got to like play five and they didn't score, like everyone was like, oh my God, what's wrong with their offense? And I know, Kyle, there's this tendency to just eviscerate the defenses, but this is what happens when you get literally the number one and number two offense in the entire country, two elite quarterbacks that are among the best in the country. It can make you look silly. And I know the Big 12 gets ripped for their defenses, but for me, it's more about good quarterback play beats good defense every day of the week. And we didn't just see good quarterback. We saw quarterbacking at the highest level at certain times of the game.
Yeah. Did you think – so Oklahoma State gets the ball back in the second quarter with 1:18 left on their own
– Junior! Junior!
On their own 25. What odds – you're taking bets on Press Row. What odds did you put on Mike Gundy taking a knee right there?
Well, the question was he going to hand it off or take a knee? And he handed it off to Justice Hill. You will never in a million years convince me he was trying to go score. Just Justice Hill is just too good. And he runs for like 20 yards. Boom, they get in the hurry up, and then they're off and running.
Yeah.
To me, he'd given up again. He had two. I know they had two timeouts, but they, you know, he wasn't about to throw the ball. So I think he just said, "Look, we're going to run it, and if we get a first down, okay, we'll go after it. But if not, we'll let the clock run out." And then on the other side, Lincoln Riley pulled a Mike Gundy. He totally gave up.
I know,
with timeouts in the bag. I think he had one timeout left, and Baker Mayfield was scoring in two plays, and he just runs the clock out. That was shocking.
Yeah, that was shocking. I was stunned. And then, you know, at halftime, it felt like I had just watched like three Big Ten games in the first half of Bedlam. Like I had to go, like I needed to like lay down. I was exhausted at halftime. It was unreal.
the legendary game last year between Texas Tech and Oklahoma, the score at that halftime was 30-24.
Yeah.
And this game was 38-all. It was on pace for just an absurd score. And
the score that I picked, that I ended up picking, I think on the podcast even, was 38-33. And it was like 38-31 with, I don't know, 2 minutes left in the first half. I was like, well, I guess if Oklahoma State gets a safety and that's all the scoring that happens the rest of the game, it was absurd.
And I kept looking at the clock, Kyle. There was a period there in the beginning of the second quarter where only like 90 seconds of game clock had expired, and it had been like 30 minutes. And I kept saying out loud, like, wow, there's still 13 and a half minutes left in the second quarter. And people were just like, whoa, you're right. Yeah. Like, what is going on here?
I know. At one point, the quarterbacks had passed for 412 yards, and there were still 44 minutes left in the game, which is just outrageous, obviously.
Yeah, and then second half, the defenses, both sides, come out and made some plays.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, it's hard because you can't look at Oklahoma State's defense and say, well, they played pretty well, because you give up, I think it was like 4.2 points per drive. That's terrible. I mean, that's awful. It's so bad. But they sacked Baker Mayfield five times, you know, two interceptions. It was one of his, I think statistically in those two categories, probably one of his worst games ever, even though on the other side of it, he played incredibly, threw for 600 yards, six total touchdowns. But they did get to him a little bit, so I do have to give them credit for that, and OU did too. You know, the biggest thing for me, I wrote this in the 10 thoughts, the biggest thing of the whole game is Oklahoma State comes out second half. They have seven drives total. Four of them, if they score, they go up. So they were driving four separate times to take the lead. Three turnovers and a punt. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't get over the hump to take the lead, and they didn't lead for the last 50 minutes of the game, Carson. And that to me is just it's you know, as much as we want to say it's the defense, in a lot of ways it was the offense in the second half. They let them down when they needed them most.
Exactly. And you're right. You can beat up the defense all you want, but in this, and we don't have to go through every series, but the seminal moment is they get the ball back to Oklahoma State's offense, and they could not do it. And I agree, Kyle, like the seven drives in the second half result in 14 points. And I know you scored 52 and you expect to win most games like that, but the defense to me did enough to win the game. The offense just did not get it done in the second half. I mean,
doesn't that sound crazy to say out loud though?
It does. And it almost sounds completely insane, but I mean, but that's to me, that's what happened. And for me, the game will be remembered always for me for first down inside the goal on the 1 or 2 yard line, first down, a minute left in the third quarter, chance to go up. And Mason Rudolph throws one of the worst passes of his entire career into double coverage in the end zone on first down on a run pass option where he had the chance to hand it off. Looked like Hill would have walked in, and he tried to go rogue, and he tried to, you know, thread the needle and tried to make a pass that he shouldn't have made. And that to me is when they lost the game. And to your point about having all those chances to go ahead, the mentality of football is not something we talk about a lot either. It is draining to be down 10 the whole game, as Mike Gundy referenced in his press conference today. Yeah. It is draining mentally. It is. And that's been one of the bigger problems in these Bedlam games for OSU, is they've been trailing in all of them. That 2010 game, they're just trying to answer. 2008, they're just trying to answer. 2013 was its own deal. And in 2012, they were ahead. And OU almost lost that game because they were having to come from behind in 2012 when they lost OU won in overtime. So it's huge when you don't either cut the margin or go ahead. Like, if they go ahead going into the fourth quarter, I'm fully convinced they win that game. But Mason throws one of the worst passes of his career in the red zone when you just cannot do that. As a senior quarterback, you cannot make that throw. You just can't do it. And that's when that's the moment I will always remember and why they lost this game.
I'm glad you brought up 2012, because after the game, I wrote that this game was like 2008 and 2010. And in a lot of ways it was. Oklahoma State loses at home in a kind of a shootout. You know, they have a chance at the end or whatever. But I almost feel like it was more like the reverse of 2012, to where OU's up the entire game. They're leading. You're trying to come back. You've got a shot at the end. You can tie it on a field goal, maybe get to overtime, see what happens, you know, just have a chance. And unlike OU in 2012, when they drove all the way down and did it, Oklahoma State didn't do that this year. And to me, it felt like that game, only with not as good of an outcome for Oklahoma State fans as OU fans had in 2012.
That's a good point. I mean, Blake Bell answers to get it to overtime. They had the chance to, so yeah, it's very similar. You wouldn't have trotted Amendola out there for a 54-yarder, would you?
No. I did not think at the time they should, and I still don't. I thought they did the right thing, and you know,
yeah.
If you stepping back, like, so we went down. Did you go down to the field at all at the end?
I was up top still.
Okay, so Kyle Boone and I went down. And we were standing on the kind of the deck in front of or by Gallagher Eye, but kind of overlooking the east end zone. And the pick by Whitener, that's as loud as I've ever heard that place. Because so Baker's rolling out. He's like looking right down our line of sight. And I just don't think he saw Whitener. Whitener just kind of stepped out of the shadows, picks it off, takes it the other way. And you're like, holy crap, like, Oklahoma State's going to win this game. There's 3 minutes left, 60 yards to go. I think they had at least two. I think they had all three timeouts at the time. And, you know, just run your stuff. Just do your, you know, do what you do and go score. And those last seven plays over that, you know, basically their last drive, they only ran Justice Hill one time. And I thought Justice Hill was, if Baker was the 1A best player on the field, I thought Justice Hill was 1B. I thought he was unbelievable on Saturday. And Gundy was asked about this on Monday, and he said, you know, it's not that we weren't calling running plays. He's like, pretty much all of our stuff is RPO. It's run pass option. It's up to Mason, and his read was that he should pass it. And whatever, I don't know, but I do know you got to get the ball to Justice Hill, who's been spectacular all night, and they didn't do it, and it felt like they panicked a little bit at the end, even though it felt like they were playing with 30 seconds left instead of 3 minutes, and I hated that part of it more than I hated the way that it ended with the overthrow to Tyron.
Yeah, I agree. And back to the interception, I don't know if I've ever heard it louder than that either. Brian Keating and I were, when it happened, we were just talking about it afterwards. I was trying to think of another moment that approaches that moment. I think the best one I could come up with was the 2013 fumble return against Baylor.
Yeah.
That Tyler Patman got, where people had like 80, 90 yards to celebrate and get loud as he just walked in.
Can you imagine if Whitener would have taken it 100?
Oh my gosh. Well, at first I thought it was a DB because I was up pretty high up above the press box. And then when I realized it was Whitener, I was like, oh, you can't score. But if that had been like AJ Green or somebody, I thought there was a split second where I thought they might go score.
Yeah.
But to your point, the crowd was unbelievable.
Oh, it was awesome.
And I know Mike Gundy talked about this in his press conference today, is he wanted to make OSU and Boone Pickens Stadium kind of like an SEC environment. The tailgating before the game to me is second to none. I've been all over the country. It's as good as any place I've ever been.
Yep.
The crowd was, as you mentioned, in there early. It was loud. Boone Pickens Stadium has become one of the better college football environments you're ever going to find. And I don't know if people that go to games in Stillwater realize that. I've been to SEC country. I've been all over the place, and it's as good as anywhere. I thought it was sensational, and that moment was one I'll never forget. But
I couldn't agree more. The moment to me that sticks out, so there were two for me just off the top of my head that I can remember. One was the Gilbert kick return in 2010 against OU.
That's a good one.
That one was up there. And then the stop, it was different because Oklahoma State was rolling, but the goal line stop against TCU in 2015. Who was their quarterback
that was when Whitener came on the scene. He played for an injured Ryan Simmons that game.
Yeah.
He made the stop.
Who was the quarterback for TCU? He turned into
Trayvon Boykin.
Yeah, Boykin. They stopped him at the goal line. That was pretty loud too. So there have been moments, but the Whitener one was up there, and then, you know, they didn't get it done at the end.
Yeah, and the last drive, it's funny how, what did we all talk about before this game? If they don't throw the ball, I want them fired. And then Justice Hill turns into Barry Jr., Barry 2.0 during the game.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle, he looked like the best running back OSU's had, not named Thurman or Barry in that game.
I know.
That's what he looked like. Justice Hill is going to leave Oklahoma State as all everything, all Big 12, all league, all American. He might even be a Heisman finalist by the time he's done. He's that good.
Yeah.
And the run where he trucked over the guy was unbelievable. And I do think they should have run the ball there. I mean, I do, but I'm also willing to admit that if they ran the ball there and get stopped, then then they get burned to the ground for being conservative. So I'm not going to sit here and second guess the play calling. And I think Mike's right. A lot of it is RPO, where it's up to Mason, and a play that no one's going to talk about.
Yeah, this was smart. I like this.
First down. I think it's first down. I can't remember what down it was. I think it was first down.
I think it was second down.
Well, it was first down, but I don't know if it was the first set of down. I think it was the second set of first downs they had, because they got a first down, didn't they, on the last drive?
Yeah, you're right. This was right after the targeting. I just pulled it up.
It was right after the targeting play. They run a really good play. They get Keenan Brown going the other way, opposite of the OU defense, and it's a one-on-one scenario with the OSU or the OU defensive back. And instead of just cutting up field and getting 5 yards, something that Dylan Stoner is so good at, that Josh Cooper was so good at before him, he tries to run around him and run horizontal as opposed to vertical, and he gets tackled. And instead of being second and five, it's second and nine. then boom, they get 1 yard on the very next play, and then you're behind the chains, and you're in serious trouble. So that's a play that no one's going to remember, but you have to get upfield there. And now maybe that's on OSU for throwing it to Keenan Brown, a guy who hadn't touched the ball very much, and he's not used to catching it and making plays like that. But I thought that was a hugely critical play that will go unnoticed when we talk about this game 10 years from now.
Were you surprised that they overturned the targeting?
I was shocked. I mean, I didn't even think you could review that. I thought they were just reviewing. I thought they were just reviewing that. Are they going to kick the guy out or not? It's OU ball, but should we kick the guy out? I thought that's what they were going to review. And apparently that's what they were reviewing. But I guess Dean Blandino comes on and says, I didn't get to watch the broadcast. But apparently he came on and said, guys, there's actually a rule that if it's an egregious error, they can review that too. And that's exactly what they did. So I guess they can review anything now if they deem it an egregious error. They can review if Mike Gundy took his shirt off or not if it's an egregious error. So I was shocked they overturned it, but I do think it's the right call. It happened before the interception, but I was surprised.
Can you imagine how that call would have been viewed by everybody if Oklahoma State goes on to score, win that game, win the Big 12, get into the college football playoff?
I mean, even Lincoln Riley said it was the right call. Now, would he say that if they lost? I don't know. But even Lincoln Riley agreed with it. So I don't know how controversial it would have been.
It was. Okay, let's talk about the pass to Tyron. Gundy said during the timeout they discussed kicking it. They thought about it. But he said he had confidence in the play they were running out of the set that they had because OU hadn't seen it before. By the way, Gundy on Monday said he at one point, Yurcich called a post to Washington, and he almost got on the headset and said, you know, here's what I think. He goes, I just shut up. We score a touchdown. He goes, I'm learning to be a good coach. I'm learning to shut up. He goes, Yurcich was feeling it. He was like, he goes, he was rolling. He was feeling it. He was like, he was lights out on Saturday night. And you said that too, and he was. I thought he was – pretty awesome for most of the game, but did you agree with what they ran out of that 4th and 8 in that last drive?
Well, I don't even think you even have a discussion amongst your assistant coaches as far as if you're kicking a field goal or not. You take Amendola's helmet away, and just, you put it under the bench and say we're a great offense. We don't need you here. So I was a little offended. Like Gundy was even asked about it. I mean, I get you have to ask the question, but like. Gundy like went on this big explanation why they went for it. It's like, Gundy, you don't have to explain. Like, this is the right call. Like, you're not kicking a 54-yarder with Amendola. You're just not. And the play itself, it's hard for me. Like, the end result, I hate. I think you need 8 or 9 yards to get a first down. You go with a play that you have in the depths of your playbook that you know – you know you can get 8 or 9 yards. You're not throwing it 50. You're not. That's a low percentage play, even with a guy like Mason Rudolph, who's one of the best deep ball throwers in the country. I'm running a triple tree where they go to all three guys go all to the same side of the field. He has three options to get the first. You know, I'm running a play that I think is a layup. Maybe they did, because if you go back and watch that, Dylan Stoner is wide open on the other side of the field.
Yeah,
he had two guys wide open on the other side of the field. He just went to Tyron. So the end result, I hate. It's a low percentage throw. It's a throw that Baker Mayfield makes in his sleep. It's a throw that Mason will regret forever. Now, I can also kind of see where Mason's coming from. If you go back and watch that play, there is contact. Trey Brown makes contact with Tyron. And as soon as that ball hit the ground, Mason goes ape you know what on the ref, saying he was held. And if you go back and watch it, as soon as the ball lands, like Trey Brown does the puts his arms up in the air like, I didn't do anything, I didn't touch him, don't call it. Like, so I think Mason thinks he was held and that held up the timing, but we'll never know. And I thought it was a low percentage throw, low percentage play when you had to have a first down. Now maybe they wanted him to go to the other side of the field, I'll never know.
Well, I think he wanted to go to the other side of the field because the guy that he'd been going to all night when he had to have a first down on fourth down at the goal line, whatever, was Marcel Aitman, and he was on the other side of the field. But he said somebody asked him about it afterwards, and he was like, there was nothing. Like, they were all over Marcel. I loved it. I love the play call. I actually thought as they were coming out of that timeout, I thought they should just go for it right here. Like just go for the touchdown. And if you, I mean, I think the flip side of that argument is, wow, you're leaving OU a lot of time, you know, even if you do score the touchdown. But I loved that they went for it. I loved that they went to Tyron, and maybe he was held, maybe not, but it felt like he did not, even if he hadn't been held, it just didn't feel like he threw it the way that he wanted to. He didn't get much air under it. And,
he didn't.
I feel like
Mason throws that to the top of the stadium and down. He puts so much air. He puts too much air under it for me. And even on that play too.
Well, he didn't have enough because he didn't give Tyron, you know.
You have too much on it. It went too far.
No, but I'm saying like it looked a little flat. Like it looked like cuz it sailed, right? It didn't by too much air, if he throws it a little bit higher, then Tyron has more time to run under it, is what I'm saying.
Well, I was standing at the top of the stadium, and it reached eye level with me. He just threw it too far. So and again, it's these little plays. You know, if he hits that throw, we're saying he's the greatest quarterback in OSU history. He dethroned Baker Mayfield. But the fact is, he didn't make the throw. And it's a throw to me. I'm sorry. Baker Mayfield hits that throw. And I know Baker threw two picks just like Mason. But when he had guys open 70 yards down the field, he hit them in the numbers. And that's the difference in the game.
Baker Mayfield's got a cannon, by the way. I don't think I had seen him in person yet. He's got a freaking arm.
Yeah, I mean, he has great arm strength.
He doesn't look like because he's kind of small. You kind of think of him as being like a, I don't know, just like a dual threat, like whatever. But he can throw it. I mean, it was incredible some of the throws that he made. I don't know. It was kind of an anticlimactic ending just for the shootout that we got in the first half. And then you ended on a pick and then a turnover on downs. You're like, wait a second. Is that it? Like that's the end of the game. But I do want to stick with Tyron for a minute because he was awesome on Saturday. We talked about it. I said last week, in games like this, sometimes you see the most talented guys show up, and he did, and his two touchdowns were incredible. I mean, were you just did you have to be restrained up? Were you on the top deck?
Yeah, he left Back to the Future treadmarks past Parnell Motley, the flame tracks. he juked him completely out of his jersey. If Tyron had caught that touchdown pass that Mason overthrew him on at the end of the game, I probably would have crowd surfed down all the way down. Like people would just be like, Carson, you did it. You told us Tyron was the man. He scored. Here, we'll send you down there with him. But I would have crowd surfed down from the top deck all the way down to the field, and it would have been like Maverick and Iceman, me and Tyron down on the field while everyone like lifts us up and carries us off the field. No, but first off, you owe me an apology.
Yeah,
about Tyron.
I do.
Do you want to call him overrated some more?
No. I think if he would have caught that pass, you would have ranked him. Like the debate for you would have been Tyron, Rashawn, and James Washington as the and Blackman as the four best receivers in Oklahoma State history.
He'd probably be number one. Actually.
You would.
Well, I just.
No. Hold on. I want to give you your apology. You were right. I was wrong. Tyron's awesome. He's incredible. He's an unbelievable talent. I think that what we're both a little bit unaware of is that he had been kind of moved around in terms of what position he was playing, inside, outside. Gundy said he said today he forgot where he was in terms of the culture earlier in the year. But he's the man. I mean, he is unbelievable. And the move to your point, the move that he put on Motley on the touchdown, this was the slant over the middle. I thought Joel Klatt was going to just come out of his shoes because he said he got the corner's hips turned and it, he sounded like Gundy. He goes, it was over. I mean, it was he's gone. Like, he was completely over, and he looked every bit the five-star that he was coming out of high school. And I don't know. Him and Justice Hill were so much fun to watch on Saturday.
I feel so vindicated by Tyron Johnson. I mean, for all the people that have tweeted me, that have listened to this podcast, Carson, quit talking about Tyron. He doesn't even play. He doesn't even do anything. He's overrated. Shut your mouth and listen. Tyron Johnson is a freako. He is, as I said, the most explosive player on the team, not named James Washington. And he might be even more explosive than James Washington. That's not an overstatement. And
no, he was
this
awesome.
This inside-outside nonsense, Oklahoma State has mismanaged Tyron Johnson. They have not used him effectively. It reminds me so much of Tyreek Hill. They didn't know what to do with Tyreek Hill. It's been a horrible coaching move, the way they've dealt with Tyron. Now, has Tyron been a problem off the field, and that's why he's not playing? It sounds like that's what Gundy's telling us as far as getting out of his world. But
forgot where he was.
But it didn't. I had to watch Tyron for 5 seconds, and I knew that this guy was different than any other player they had on their team as far as the talent level he has. And it was great to see him step up. You know, James Washington gets hurt. That derails 99% of the offenses in the country when you lose a guy like that.
Yeah.
And they just plugged Tyron right in, and it was like they didn't miss a beat. That was unbelievable. And he backed up everything I've ever said about the guy, and then some. And it was a joy to watch.
How good was the throw from Mason to Tyron in the corner?
That was as good of a throw as one of the better throws I've ever seen at any level. Just put it right over his shoulder. Didn't have to break a stride. That was the opposite of his last throw. It was incredible. So it's one thing to rail on Mason for the throw he didn't make, but he doesn't even get in that position if he doesn't make that throw.
Well, and to your point, I mean, we always talk about who's your guy with the chip when the chips are down. Who are you going to? Oklahoma State's season and program on the line. They got a Tyron. Well, final throw, you know, and they didn't get it. But I think that says a lot about how much they believe in him, how much Mason believes in him. And man, it was set up. I went back and watched it about 10 or 12 times. He catches that ball because he's wide open. He's got two steps on the corner. Safety's not getting over there in time. And if he catches it, it's right in front of where the students are. And he did this in the Tulsa game. He does the Jason Terry airplane, like just through the end zone all the way to the other side. And Mr. Pickens might have needed to make another donation to rebuild the student, like the section where the students are. Because that place would have been, I mean, it would have been just complete insanity.
See, he wouldn't have been able to slow down, though. He would have gone straight through that tunnel, that Blackman tunnel that Whedon first threw his touchdown pass to. He just would have kept going. He would have done the Jason Terry all the way to the locker room and cracked a few Tyron sirens in the locker room. You said it's a wrap.
And then Baker would have scored with 3 seconds left.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, Kyle. Like, I know that they didn't score and that's how they lost the game, but who's to say Baker doesn't go down and score like immediately? we'll never know. But
yeah.
And here's another thing, Kyle. I know people are upset they gave up the touchdown run to Trey Sermon. Mike Gundy was especially upset about it. That's the only chance OSU had to win the game is letting him score there. When he breaks off the run, you don't tackle him.
Yeah.
Because they can run the clock out. And even afterwards, OU, like Lincoln Riley, like, yeah, I wish he would have taken a knee like Samaje did, which Samaje did that when the game was over. Like, he really wanted him to take a knee just so they could run the clock out in the game, because Sermon scores, OSU has to just go down to get a quick score, which they had plenty of time to do that. They screwed around and threw a bunch of Hail Marys that didn't pan out. But let's say they connect on one of those Hail Marys, onside kick, another Hail Mary. Now, obviously, that is like a 1% chance of happening, but there's a 0% chance they win if Sermon takes a knee.
Yep.
So all the people that got really upset about that, like, that was their only chance to get the ball back.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. okay, we need to toast. It's time for the Coop Ale Works Toast of the Week. Coop Ale Works, bring great-tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. I'm guessing you're going to be toasting a Saturday Siren, so I will let you go first and do your toast.
You would guess right. my toast obviously is going to go to Tyron Johnson. 13, as Gundy would probably call him. You know, he showed up as this enigmatic talent, five-star, all everything, and he has been totally misused, totally cast to the side, which, granted, OSU's had one of the best offenses in the country. It's hard to argue that. I would argue that they would be the number one offense in the country, not number two now, if they had used him all season long. But credit Tyron. He got suspended for a game. He obviously learned his lesson, and he stepped up when his number was called. I mean, let's face it, against Oklahoma, national TV, James Washington gets hurt. They put him in his position, and he looked like James Washington as far as the deep balls and everything else. So Saturday Siren, long overdue. I've had him on ice. I've had him at my house just waiting and waiting and waiting for them to finally throw Tyron the ball. I feel vindicated. I'm sure Tyron feels vindicated. And I'm cracking two and smashing them together like Stone Cold Steve Austin and putting them on my face.
Like KD did after the finals win.
Only I know how to drink and KD doesn't.
Okay, I'm going with an F5. I always go F5. It's my favorite. But I'm going for an F5 for what my, who somebody who might be the – I'm trying to think of – I'm going to maybe miss somebody just egregiously, but – I think the best player out of Oklahoma in the last, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years, something like that, Justice Hill. Gundy called him the best running back in the country today. 228 yards against OU on 30 carries. He was unbelievable. And I know that OU's defense is not great, but and you and I talked about this coming in, their run defense was good. Or had been good all year, and Justice made him look terrible. I mean, I can't get over how insanely good he was on Saturday, and he got lost because of the loss and just everything else that happened. Tyron and Mason and Baker and whatever, but I could not have been more impressed by his performance, and could not be more excited about him and JD King over the next 3 years. So. An F5 to Justice Hill.
That's a great one. And I'm shocked that OSU was able to run the ball as well as they did against Oklahoma. I did not think they would be able to, but what you saw was a different level of running back. I mean, that touchdown run, which was a great design, where OSU used a lot more motion, which they had not done all year. They motioned the receiver to get the that guy out of the way, and Justice Hill just runs right by Oboe and seemingly scored before OU knew what had happened. Just for me, he's we talked a lot about where Mason ranks. He's the best running back not named Barrier Thurman that I've seen. It's really not that close.
I think he's better than Joseph Randall.
Oh, I don't even think that's a discussion anymore.
Really?
After what I saw.
I mean, Joseph Randall's pretty good. But I think Justice.
Joseph Randall was awesome. He was an All-American.
Yeah, I think Justice is better.
Well, and just Randall was a better receiver, but Randall never jumped off the screen like that. Like jumped off the just. You look to the guy next to you and go, "What was that?"
Yeah, I did that.
What was that?
I was sitting by Kyle Boone and Bill Haston in the press box, and. I just looked at, I think it was Boone after one of his, and I was like, what am I seeing? Like, what is this? Who is this? I mean, obviously he's been great for the last year and a half, but I was blown away by what he did, and credit to the offensive line too. I mean, they opened up some holes for him, and he obviously took advantage of them, but I thought they did a really good job in terms of the running game on Saturday.
The offensive line played really well. You mentioned the running game, but Mason really wasn't hurried until what, second half when he had the fumble. They kept him clean for the most part.
Yeah,
and I thought the offensive line really played well. And have they still not been called for a holding all year? That's pretty impressive.
Is that true?
That was coming into the game. Mark Cooper tweeted out that the offensive line had not been called for holding all year.
Wow.
And I don't think they were in Bedlam, unless I'm just getting old and forgot. But no, the offensive line played really well. One thing I have to bring up, Kyle, and it's not going to go well for our listeners. Probably won't like this, but
I've got like 10 things, by the way, that we still need to talk about. But go ahead.
Okay. I mean, it's obvious to everyone now that, you know, Baker Mayfield's better than Mason Rudolph, and you and I talked about that before, and people get upset. But this was shocking to me. I went and looked up their career numbers, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Mason Rudolph has never completed 64% of his passes for a season. Baker Mayfield completed 64% his freshman year at Tech.
Wow.
Baker Mayfield has gone 64, 68, 70, 71 on completion percentage.
It's unbelievable. Mason
57, 62, 63, 63. Which, again, Mason's awesome, but this was a different level of quarterback play. And I thought my colleague Brian Keating, we do the segment Crashing the Boards every Sunday.
Yeah.
We talk about Bedlam. And he he brought up a great point in that, you know, Mason and this team is just playing in the wrong era.
Yep.
They're going up against Baker Mayfield has gone from not only just like the best quarterback at Oklahoma, just one of the best college quarterbacks to play the game.
Yeah.
Mike Gundy compared him to Vince Young. And so did Brian Keating. So Brian Keating was a little prophetic. He compared him to Vince Young in 2005 as far as what he does for his team. And Mike Gundy on Monday press conference said, he reminds me of Vince Young, and when a play breaks down, he is almost you can't defend the guy. And so as much as we want to break down how bad the defense played and, you know, what the offense could have done better, they got beat by the superior quarterback. And in college football, as we learned with Vince Young, that's all that matters. And just – I never would have dreamed Baker Mayfield would be this good when he got there, and this is going to infuriate a lot of people too. And I'm gonna get our fans riled up, and this is something they'll agree with me on. Actually, Baker Mayfield's at Texas Tech, Kyle. He knows the transfer rules. You transfer within the Big 12, you lose a year. That's the rule. He could have transferred anywhere in the country, anywhere he wants to go. He knew the rule. He transfers to OU anyway. That's where he wants to go. Okay, fine. You got to sit out a year. He sits out a year. Then what happens? He wins the job. He becomes this great quarterback. Oh, that was unfair. The NCAA took a year from me. I'm just a walk-on. That shouldn't apply to me. No, you knew the rule going in. So somehow OU gets this extra year, and really it costs Oklahoma State, in all intents and purposes, a Big 12 championship. Because Kyler Murray, to me, is not winning that game on Saturday.
No.
It took the best out of Baker Mayfield to win it. And it's amazing to me that he could know the rule going in and they could change it mid-flight, mid-career. If you want to go after the fact and be, okay, Baker Mayfield was a walk-on, we'll change that rule. But we can't do it after you've already decided to transfer when you knew the rule.
Yep.
So OSU got screwed on the Baker Mayfield ruling, and you have to wonder if the shoe was on their other foot, would Oklahoma State have gotten that ruling? You know, it took David Boren, Joe Castiglione, two very powerful figures at Oklahoma, to get that changed, and it cost Oklahoma State because they had to play Baker Mayfield a third time.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the way that the rule has changed is the way that it should be. I think it's correct now, but it's a little retroact, little revisionist history, you know, like
he didn't have to go to Oklahoma.
I know
he could have gone anywhere he wanted, and other than, you know, stay out of the Big 12. You want to go play in the SEC, Pac 12, Big 10, doesn't matter. Go play wherever you want. He knew the rule. He obviously knew they could get it changed, I guess. But that's something that people don't talk about. But that's something that changed the course of history for Oklahoma State.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he. I think the fun part for me on Saturday, and I, the loss aside, I had a blast. Like it was everything you want in terms of atmosphere, in terms of crowd. And I don't know if you saw the Fox had like this. I think it was a drone, and they showed these kind of overhead shots of Boone Pickens, fireworks going off. They had the flyover. I mean, it was all the pageantry and everything you want out of a college football game. And I could not have enjoyed it more, other than the final drive. But to your point, Baker Mayfield's going to win the Heisman. He won the Heisman on Saturday, in my opinion, from an outsider looking in. And
it's not even close.
Yeah, he had more touchdowns than his other five closest competitors combined. And he's not. They're not going to lose, I don't think. I think they're going to win out. And he is I mean, Gundy said this after the game, and I could not agree with it more. I've kind of gone back and forth on how I feel about him. I think he's a great villain. I wrote that before the game. I think he's just so perfect for a rivalry and for whatever. But Gundy said this after the game, and I agree. He said he's like, I respect guys who back it up. He goes, six, he frustrates guys sometimes, you know, or he frustrates people sometimes with the stuff he does, but he backs it up. He plays the game, you know, and I agree with him. I mean, for all the crap that he talks, and people saw the video of him going up to a fan before the game and reminding that fan of OU's record in Bedlam, which is an absurd thing to do. If you do that and you go out and you throw four interceptions like JT Barrett at Iowa, that's why you're JT Barrett. You're not going to win the Heisman. Baker Mayfield goes out and scores six touchdowns, puts up 598 on a top 25 defense. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like he's, and I think people get frustrated because they look at him and you're like, this guy, you know, you look at Vince Young and you're like, okay, I get it. You look at Sam Bradford, you're like, yeah, I get it. Like the arm, and you look at Baker Mayfield, and you're like, well, I don't get it. And then he goes out and does what he does, and it's astounding. I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah, Mike was like, there was third and 12. He just sidearms it, hits him right in the numbers. But no, I mean, and that goes back to my point about, you know, I'm sure a lot of fans were coming into the season, I like Mason better than Baker. Well, it's no contest, and he's going to win the Heisman. And he completed 24 passes, Kyle, and threw for 600 yards.
I know.
25 yards per completion. It was insane.
It was a joke. And to your point about the completion percentage, it's not like he's throwing three-yard outs.
No, he's throwing bombs.
Yeah, he throws the ball down the field.
That's another thing, Kyle, like, this is a problem that ain't going to go away. Even when Baker leaves, OU's obviously going to go down at the quarterback position. But Lincoln Riley he schemes players into not just getting open, to getting acres of space. I thought Stephen Mandeville wrote his five thoughts on Bedlam. He said Lincoln Riley's going to call plays where a fullback can moonwalk into the end zone. And it's true. Like that Rodney Anderson play, like he could have turned around and moonwalked into the end zone if he wanted to. It was just like Lincoln Riley is so good at scheming guys wide open. And it's clear to me they tried to take away Mark Andrews. He had a big start to the game and you never heard from him again. Well, what happened? They went over the top with Marquise Brown and over the middle with Marquise Brown, and he ended up lighting them up. But just the Lincoln Riley problem ain't going away. That guy is so good at getting guys wide open.
Yeah, and I was wrong coming into the year. I didn't think he would be able to be the OC and the head coach, kind of like Cliff has struggled with a little bit. Well, I guess he hasn't struggled, but they're not winning at Tech. And Riley's done it really well. You know, I feel like he's done. I feel like he actually hasn't maybe gotten enough credit for the job that he's done so far at OU. But
they have the most efficient offense ever, I guess, or since 2005 USC.
Yeah,
that's what Jake Trotter tweeted out. So
yeah,
that's good he's done.
Okay, we need to talk unis. Oh, do we need to talk unis? Let's get to this week's uniform review, brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one stop shop. Your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Carson, I think we discussed on this podcast the sliver of a possibility of the All Blacks being worn during Bedlam, and it happened, and the brand was back. Your dad was no doubt delighted, and it was, I think, one of the three best uniforms they've ever worn.
Bear with me here. Bear with me. I got a clip. I can't pull it up, dang it. No, I mean, you and I had a sneaking suspicion that all black would happen. I thought it'd be black, orange, black, but the brand is back. The brand lives. Give me the brand. Give it to me in chrome form. I forgot the brand existed. I thought it was dead. We had read its last rites. And not only did we get the brand, like, before they even debuted the uniforms on Saturday, we were talking in the Slack chat, and I said that the matte black brand helmet they wore in the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago, despite debuting 37 helmets, is still the best helmet they have. By far for me. It's not even close. It's still the best helmet. And then they go and throw a chrome brand on it for good measure, which I can go back and forth. I like the regular brand, and I also like the chrome brand. But that was as good of a uniform as we've ever seen. I love the all black. I always have.
Yeah.
The thing we haven't talked about yet with the new uniforms is the orange numbers with the white trim just fly off the jersey. They don't just pop. They fly off the jersey into your room when you're watching it on TV. You combine that with the chrome brand. I just thought they looked next level, and it was just perfection. I have nothing bad to say. I thought Justin Southwell, he does the uniform grades on the blog. He nailed it. A++ on the helmet, A all around. It was awesome.
I think Southwell actually willed it into existence. He started tweeting about the brand like the second the West Virginia game ended. but I the only thing I disagree with you on is I love the chrome brand. I think they wore it. The last time we saw the brand, they wore the chrome brand on the white helmet to open the 2016 season, and I could not get enough of it. And the fact that they brought it back for the black helmet, I mean, I just
awesome.
Oh, I thought it was spectacular. Yeah, I got nothing to add. It was
well,
perfect.
And I said this back in 2011. When you wear all black, you just look bigger, meaner. All of the above. It's just a great look. And I thought it was a great uniform matchup, too, between that and the all-whites from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And, no, it was awesome. I love all black, but I don't think I love it as much as I used to, like back in 2011, because we hadn't seen it, you know? I think, like, if they had worn, like, orange pants with that, maybe better, but it was awesome. I don't even want to nitpick. It was just... Yeah. It's more of a personal thing for me. I don't love all blacks. Like, all black to me used to be far and away my number one combo. So I've wavered on that a little, but it looked awesome. And
yeah,
no complaints whatsoever.
Yeah. It was great. Do you have a uni silver medalist? If you don't, I've got one and I can go.
Well, Tyron goes and stands on the third place podium. They put the medal over his head. He goes and stands on the silver medal podium. They put the medal on his head. He catches Mason's pass one-handed and bends over on the first gold medalist platform, and then they give him the medal. He's wearing three medals, and he has the touchdown pass in his hand while getting the medals. There is no – he gets all the medals. It's not even close.
So he won the Heisman, the Biletnikoff, and
– He swept the medal stand, the medal podium.
Another award. Well, I'll give my silver medalist, and that was Calvin Bundage. I think I've probably given it to him before. I love him wearing number one. I loved it was kind of odd, but I love the white like sleeve things that he wore on his forearms.
Yeah,
and then he does the Conor McGregor walk, and they're just he's flailing everywhere.
That's my favorite thing about him is the Conor McGregor walk.
I thought that was fantastic. He's a lunatic. I mean, he is a crazy human being, and he gets he's a problem for both teams, his and the other team at times. But I thought he was pretty good on Saturday. He had a couple mistakes, but
he's an animal. He's an animal. When they put him on the edge and just say go get the quarterback, teams have to hold him. They have to tackle him. He's too much of an animal for him.
He ducked under who's the tackle for OU, Orlando Brown.
Yeah,
he ducked under Orlando Brown on one play, and it was just like Orlando Brown didn't. I don't even know if he saw him. Like he just cut out, cut in, ducked under him, and Mayfield is, you know, running for his life. And but yeah, I love the way he wore the all black on Saturday. I'm so glad Oklahoma State gets to have him for another 2 years.
And he was robbed of one of the great touchdowns in Bedlam history. He gets the touchdown on the fumble that was overturned, and he doesn't even hesitate, Kyle. He scores. He automatically just goes into the Conor McGregor strut, just the way down the sideline. It was sensational. And
that was kind of like, wasn't there a might have been 04. There was a defensive touchdown by Oklahoma State against OU, and it was down at that end zone, same end zone. OU fumbled on like the 5 or something, and maybe they fumbled in the end zone and it got picked up. I wish I could remember what year that was. I think it was 04. I'll look it up. But yeah.
And OSU got it?
Yeah, same type deal.
And it counted or took away?
It did count, but it was just like the exact same spot that they picked it up, which was interesting to me. But I love Bundage. He was great. And yeah, that's all I got.
Well, and I thought you have done a great job since in the aftermath of Oklahoma State losing Bedlam to point out how good Oklahoma State's been as a program. You tweeted out, I think, 8 Power 5 schools have a better record than OSU over the past 8 years. So there's this tendency for fans to go, we deserve better. We 10 wins is not enough. And it's absolutely absurd. The job Mike Gundy's done has been unbelievable. And I think people just think now that with the job Mike Gundy's done, that OSU's some like sleeping giant and that some other coach could come in and start winning like Bama. That's absurd. And I also thought, you can comment on that, but I also thought Gundy really poured his heart and soul out in that post-game press conference. Yep. He was talking about how he's like, look, nobody wants to win more than me. You can tell people have probably insinuated that to him, that Bedlam doesn't bother him as much as it should. And I thought he did a really good job of not only coaching in the game, finally, but really explaining how he felt afterwards.
It was Grant Jones, 2004, 0-yard fumble return I think it was a Jason White fumble.
Wow, I have no recollection of that. Although I do know Grant Jones.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's hard because when I tweeted that out, I kind of went on a Twitter rant on Sunday. My kids were screaming at me in the car, and I'm trying to like look up stats in the passenger seat. It was not a good situation, but it's a little misleading, and I don't think I meant for it to be like yes, Mike Gundy needs to beat OU. Like nobody disagrees with that, but and so I'm not saying that this like makes up for it, but I just want everybody to understand two things. And the first is Oklahoma State's program as a like their program trajectory is unbelievable. I don't mean just for Oklahoma State. I mean that at the end of this year, they will be within 3 or 4 wins of Florida State over the last 8 years. that's a joke. Now, I understand Florida State's played bigger games and they've played in the playoffs and whatever, but even the fact that you're in that conversation, any team that's in that conversation is incredible. So that's one thing. And then the second thing, and the problem with all of this is that one of the 8 teams that's been better than them and one of the 3 or 4 that's been significantly better than them over the same 8-year period is OU. And it sucks. You said, who did you say had been born at the wrong time earlier?
Well, Rudolph and Gundy, this team came along during the Baker Mayfield era.
Yeah, Gundy. So, I wrote this on Sunday. Gundy to me is Andy Roddick, and Stoops / Lincoln Riley are Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Andy Roddick, awesome at tennis, won a major, won a ton, but he couldn't beat Federer. He couldn't beat Nadal. And it's like, it's sort of like Ricky Fowler a little bit. You're with Spieth and Rory, two guys who are going to be like top 20 players ever, you know? And it sucks. Like, I hate it. Gundy hates it. OSU fans hate it. Everything. But there has to be perspective on, you can have a 9.5 wins a year team and also hate losing to OU and not want to fire Gundy. You know, like, that's
right.
That is preposterous. Like, you don't burn everything down to get 5% better. You do figure out how to get 5% better, how to get 10% better, whatever it is, but it's not by completely hitting the reset button, which is, and I think it's just emotions after Bedlam or whatever, but it's a crazy notion and a crazy thing to think. So I didn't want that rant to be misleading. I just kind of wanted to provide some overarching perspective for people.
Yeah. Context. I mean, you're right. I mean, what you also wrote, there's like four plays, and if those four plays go differently, Gundy's like, what, 500?
Six and seven,
I guess.
Yeah.
Against Oklahoma. And that, I don't want to make that out to be too much of a thing, because obviously you could do that with any sport, any game. But just one play, if Gilbert hangs onto the ball, they have two Big 12 titles, and he beat OU. So, like, the margin for error in these things is super small. And in a way, I do feel for Mike for being so close in so many of these games and not coming through. But it's
and you said it on Saturday. They emptied the tank. Yurcich was feeling it. Gundy was feeling it. They went for it. They didn't hand it off at the end as much as you and I are complaining about it right now. They let it hang out and they got beat, and that's fine. Like, I'm fine with that. I have no issues with that. It sucks. I don't want Oklahoma State to lose to OU, but how cool would it be? And I don't think this will happen, but they still have a chance to backdoor into the Big 12 title, and to get another shot at OU would be pretty crazy.
Do they want that?
Well, that's what Philip Slavin, who's a writer for us, he asked if we had a poll question for Tuesday yet, and he said, you need to ask if fans want another shot at OU. And I said, well, won't that be like 99% to 1%? And he was like, I don't know, dude. I don't know if it will be.
I don't know if people want to go through that again, just mentally.
Yeah. Okay, we need to hear one more time from our sponsor, Chris's University Spirit. And then I've got a couple more things, and then we'll wrap up. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, Carson, to my point earlier, can you give me the only team in the last 8 years, so since 2010, that has beaten OU more times than Oklahoma State?
How many teams are there?
They've played, I think, 33 programs, and only one has beaten OU more times than Oklahoma State.
Texas?
Baylor.
You talking in their history?
No, in the last 8 years.
Oh, the last 8 years, you said. Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Only Baylor has beaten them more than OSU?
Baylor's got 3 wins. Texas and Oklahoma State have 2. A couple other teams have 2. Clemson has 2, and also 0 losses. But, you know, to everyone's point, Alabama's 0-1, Auburn's 0-1, Ohio State doesn't have a winning record, Notre Dame doesn't have any. I mean, beating OU is really, really hard. I'm not trying to make excuses, because Oklahoma State should have beaten Oklahoma more than twice over the last 8 years, but it's not an easy thing to do. Baylor's 3-5, by the way.
Yeah, we all know how they did that. They're cheating like banshees down there in Waco. They had some freaks on those teams, some NFL caliber players.
They did.
It's not even a hot take. It's something that OSU fans won't like either. I'm sorry if I'm being too negative on this Monday.
No, but, it's fair. All of this is fair.
But for Oklahoma State to make the 1945 national title sign the centerpiece of Boone Pickens Stadium is the most Mickey Mouse loser mentality. That is that's one of the more embarrassing things OSU's ever done. Like, if you want to claim the title, I have no issue with that. If you want to pad the resume, if you want to put it in the media guide, fine. If you want to put it on the front of the media guide, fine. To take out the 2011 Big 12 title sign and replace it with a 1945 national title that you were retroactively given 70 years later is the height of Little League trophyism. Like, oh, we're all winners. Like, we got this. Does Gundy bring a recruit out and go, hey, son, look at that. We win national titles here in Stillwater. 1945, we won that a long time ago. Like, that is just, it's embarrassing. Like, it feeds into when OU fans make fun of OSU fans. Like, that's something they can easily make fun of. And I think it's pretty embarrassing. And then it lights up at night. It's just... I hate it. I think it's silly, and I can't believe they did that.
I 100% could not agree more. And it's a disservice to the 2011 team. I mean, you replace the 2011 – because the 2011 used to be, like, as big, right? Like, it used to be kind of go the width of the – like, in the centerpiece.
Yeah, same size, basically.
Yeah, and like, that Big 12 title was the most meaningful championship – that Oklahoma State has won in ever in football. I mean, it sounds
it's their only outright conference title since like the '70s. That was a split. It's their only outright conference.
Yeah,
title.
And the reason I say meaningful is because it was after Pickens gives all the money. It was part of this kind of rise of Oklahoma State football. I mean, Gundy said it on Monday. He's like, we've been building a culture. We've been building tradition for 8 years. That's it. I mean, he said that.
Yeah,
and you put the four. Every time I see it, though, by the way, I think of the greatest tweet of all time. I thought about this tweet for like 10 minutes on Sunday. I'm sitting at Aspen in Stillwater trying to write some stuff. Army beat Germany on the road in 1940, whatever it was. It's the best tweet ever. It's incredible.
And it reminds me of like A&M. You go to College Station on the side of their stadium. Yeah. They got like 1934 national champions that they just made up. Like, it's just one of those mythical things. And look, that 1945 team was great. But just because was it the College Football Coaches Association decides 70 years later that they deserve a piece of it? And you make it the centerpiece. Like, if you want to, again, if you want to celebrate it, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I'm great with that. If you want to pump up the resume and say we have X amount of national titles in football, that's fine. To make it the centerpiece of the entire stadium is just one of the more Mickey Mouse things I've ever seen.
They should replace it with, like, how many billions Ben Pickens is worth.
It has, like, a little check. They keep the check marks going. Just one, yeah. Two, three, slide the five. Okay.
It's like.
No, I had to get that off my chest, and I got eviscerated by some OSU people, and that's fine. Like, if you want to defend that, that's fine. You want to wear your 1945 national championship shirt and pretend like that means something, fine. But to make it the centerpiece of the stadium is just, that's an all-time just that's an embarrassing move. I'm sorry. It's laughable to me, really.
Yep, I agree. Is that how we want to end things? You got anything else for me?
No, I just had to get that off my chest. I mean, how I want to end things is, you know, just again, I saw what I needed to see, and the results.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen enough Bedlams. I know how that movie ends. As soon as they got the touchdowns wiped off the board, I had accepted OSU's fate.
Yeah.
In that game, I've seen plenty of those. I'm pretty numb to Bedlam at this point, but I saw what I needed to see. I needed to see Gundy coach like he had a pair. I needed to see Gundy coach like he does in every other game on the regular season schedule. I think part of it playing in November helped, that it wasn't the last game of the year. They went all out. They went for broke, and they crapped out, and that happens sometimes when you're playing against an all-time quarterback like they were. And so I don't have that feeling I've had in Bedlam so many times where it felt like OSU didn't do what was necessary to win. I think they did. They just didn't make the plays in the end.
Yeah, which is unfortunate that you don't have that feeling, because you gave us an all-time Barry Jr. rant, Barry J. Sanders rant last year. But your Tyron stuff from this year was pretty good as well. Now, I agree with you. they went for it over and over on fourth down. They threw the ball on the goal line to their best short yardage receiver. They fed Justice. They didn't, you know, they didn't play great defensively, but they also made plays defensively, like we covered. Two interceptions, five sacks. And they, you know, they let it hang, like you said. I mean, they did everything that they could do to try to win the game, and they just came up short. And
there was no controversy. They had the ball in their hands, chance to win the game. It didn't come down to a call. It didn't come down to anything. It came down to their offense not getting the job done. And that's a result you can live with.
And that's why it's so bizarre to me to see people like just rolling on Gundy. It's like what did Gundy do? Like, coach them to the final possession to where that, you know, giving the ball to the best offense in the country or second best or whatever to win the game. I mean, isn't that what you want? Because you're playing a top five team. You're playing a top three program over the last decade. I understand that that gets old, but it kind of is what it is. You know, you're playing the best. You're playing the Heisman Trophy winner is on the other side of the football. And you had a chance to beat him. That's not Gundy. I mean, isn't that Gundy's job? Like, isn't that the definition of his job, is to do what he did? And
the biggest play of the game, the turnover in the red zone that Mason threw, that's a run pass option. That was totally on Mason.
Yeah.
Adam Lunt will probably break it down for you in the future, but he broke it down in our Slack chat, and the guy he was supposed to be reading, Will Johnson, completely turns around to cover the guy, and instead of handing it off, Mason tried to thread the needle and make a pass he shouldn't have.
And he's staring at him.
It's not all Mike Gundy.
Yeah, and he stared at him the whole time. I think one of my takeaways, I love Rudolph. I've been riding for him for 3.5 years. I don't think that he's as good, as elite, as whatever, as I originally thought he was. That doesn't mean I don't think he's good. I think he's a tremendous quarterback. But And maybe I'm just comparing him to Baker, and Baker was just better on Saturday. But, man, he had a lot of chances, and he didn't do it, you know?
I used to think earlier in his career he was a surefire first-round pick, carried himself as a pro, all that stuff. But I've started, just in this last year and a half, 2 years, I've started to see why scouts maybe aren't as high on him as we all kind of thought they would be. I talked about how high he throws the ball. That will not go well in the NFL. And maybe part of that's just he has Washington and he just thinks, look, if I just throw it up there, he'll go get it. But he throws it way too high. He's flat-footed. I can see some of the nitpicks that scouts have had with him leading up to the draft this year that are starting to show. And the accuracy, we talk so much about the fourth quarter throws. The accuracy to start the game was not good. Mm-mm. I mean, they settled for a field goal on just a horrendous pass. Wasn't nowhere near Marcel Aitman or Washington, whoever that was. So the accurate, like at one point, you know, and we've always talked about the accuracy on short throws. And at what point is that just who he is? And again, what he is one of the very best college quarterbacks to ever play at Oklahoma State. I'm not sitting here trying to beat him up. He's as good as anybody they've ever had. But I'm starting to see some of the inefficiencies in his game that, quite frankly, Baker Mayfield didn't have. And quite frankly, that I think it's going to hurt him come draft time.
Do you think Oklahoma State wins that game with Brandon Weeden at quarterback?
Oh, I don't know if I can go that far. I don't think I can say yes, just because of everything that went wrong. But I don't think Mason belongs anywhere above Brandon, though, as far as the all-time lists. But I think, and again, the further you get away from people, the less flaws you remember.
Yeah, I know.
You brought up that Weeden threw what, 3 picks in 2010? We don't even remember those.
I know.
So I don't want to beat up on Mason Rudolph. He's one of the best that's ever played at Oklahoma State. He's a great quarterback. He threw for what, 400 freaking yards and 5 touchdowns? Oklahoma State would have killed to have a guy like that. And we're gonna see how good he is next year when they don't have him.
Again,
I don't want to beat up on him, but I used to think surefire first round pick, the NFL scouts don't know what they're talking about. Now I kind of see some of the inefficiencies.
Yeah, and to your point, like I'm not trying to beat up on him either. I think he's a top, you know, two or three quarterback in Oklahoma State history. He like Gundy said, he deserves all the records. He's done everything. Like, he has been the bedrock for a great program over the last 4 years. I just felt like it's kind of like, remember Les Miles in 03 before the game? One of these teams is the best team in the country and the other's a really good football team.
We're going to find out which is which.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of what I felt like with him and Baker. And I feel like we found out, you know? Yeah. And that's not – that again, like Mason might be the –
That's reality.
Yeah, and that's – yeah, it's not a shot at Mason. It's not me be downgrading him. He's just I thought his trajectory was you know, to go to New York to be a Heisman finalist or whatever, and it hasn't broke that way this year, I don't feel like.
No. That's not how we want to end the podcast either, is it?
God, I don't know. We're like 80 minutes in. I don't know how to – let's talk about the positive. Oklahoma State has a chance to still win 10 games for just the ninth time ever. They go to Iowa State, then they get the Kansas teams at home. And, Carson, I mean, it's not inconceivable. It's not even really that crazy to think that they could still play for the Big 12 title, because – TCU is probably going to lose at OU, which means that all you have to have, you got to win out if you're Oklahoma State. All you have to have is for TCU to lose. I believe they play at Tech, and that could happen.
Could it though?
Probably not, but it could.
Could it though?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Have you watched Texas Tech attempt to play football?
I mean, Tech stinks, but I don't know. I mean, weird stuff happens. Who knows? It probably won't.
It could happen.
But what I'm saying is Oklahoma State doesn't need four different games to break their way. They need one game, and that's the Texas Tech TCU game. Or if TCU goes to Norman and beats OU, then they need West Virginia to beat OU as well. I think that scenario is far less likely. But, again, they just need one game to break their way to go to the Big 12 title.
Yep, you're right. One more game. as much as stress as that would cause our dads, it would be a lot of fun if they met up in Dallas with OU. One final ride against Baker Mayfield and company. Sign me up for that. I know how that movie ends, but doesn't mean I don't want to see it again.
Think about the psychological just turnaround in a month of what that would be like. You're up for Bedlam, then you're down, and then all of a sudden it's Bedlam again. You're like, oh.
I think that's kind of where the blog would be, too. It would be down, up, Bedlam again.
Yeah, yeah. And I wrote this. I said, people buy in every year because there's just – it's like women getting pregnant more than once. Like a week after you have a child, you're like, I'm never getting pregnant again. Who would ever do that? And then enough time goes by, and you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad. And then you do it again. That's kind of what Bedlam's like. You have a year go by, and you're like, I believe again. I'm in again. They can do this. And then they don't. And it's another year. But a month in between, I don't know. I don't know how that would go.
Saturday was like a 5-hour labor. It really was. I don't know if I'm ready for that, but Jack Trice Stadium awaits. Oklahoma State plays at Iowa State, so yeah, they're still on trajectory to win 10 games, but disappointing Bedlam. But I wouldn't, you know, I'm glad we were both there to see it, and it was good to see you. And
yeah, it was fun.
We've seen that movie a million times, but yep, one of these days the ending will be different.
All right, Carson, we'll talk to you later on in the week.